This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome to the Storytime podcast, or Storytime with Clizair as it's now known. My name is Claire, I go by Clizair on the internet, and this is the podcast where people tell me their stories. And this week I have with me Seamus Stackpool.
Hey!
Welcome!
Thank you so much, delighted to be here, lovely to be out and about.
If you don't know Seamus, which I presume you do, but he is from the Try Channel, at least that is how we met. You obviously do other stuff. Would you like to tell everyone where to find you on the internet?
Yeah, 100%. Pretty much the best way to find me is under Mr. Stackpool. So that's MR for Mr. and then my surname Stackpool. That's Mr. Stackpool, not a lot of people when they see it written down, they think it's Mrs. Tackpool.
I can totally see how they see that.
You can visualize it. So, yeah, if you want to remember it as Mrs. Tackpool, type it in. You'll find me there on Instagram, on Twitter, pretty much not on TikTok. I'm afraid I'm too old for TikTok.
Stop it.
No, I am on TikTok, but I just don't put anything out there, which is foolish. I probably should. I should chip away at it. But yeah, if you want to follow me there, because I am stand-up comedian, I'm waiting for a lot more live gigs to return before I'm getting out and about. But at the moment, I'm actually working on a series of sketches with my friend Rebecca. So actually, if you want to follow her, because she'll be posting updates on when the sketches will be coming out, you can find her on social media under Peppermint Dolly.
Okay.
So that's my friend Rebecca Hickey. Me and her, we're just doing like two-person sketches. That'll be my next project that I'm working on. So really looking forward to that coming out.
Okay, and I will have all the links down in the description on YouTube and on the audio platforms that will be in the show notes. You just can scroll down and click if you can't remember what's been said. And it'll be on the screen as well for the YouTube viewers. Yep. So tell me this and tell me no more, Seamus. You have a story for me today.
Yes, I have a story. I have the story of what it was like to start a comedy club, run a comedy club, and then stop running the comedy club.
Okay.
So this is actually a comedy club that you appeared on. Camden Comedy Club on Camden Street.
Oh my God. And so I was going to ask why it ended, but that might be skipping to the end of the story. So I'll let you start at the start.
No, 100%. So it was basically, I was about a year and a half into doing comedy, myself and my friend Rory. And myself and my friend Rory, we met through taking an improv class together, which is where all great relationships start, is in an improv class. And he was one of the only other people in the class who was also doing stand-up at the same time. So naturally, me and him gravitated towards each other. We became mates and everything like that. And, I mean, you know yourself. I don't know if a lot of listeners know, but like, a lot of the time when you're starting out as a comedian, it is tough getting gigs. So me and Rory were about a year and a half in being comedians. You're doing open mics, you're doing stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of the time you're just sort of dreaming about what could be or how you get ahead and everything like that. And one time in Temple Bar, we were in a pub and we were bemoaning the fact that we weren't getting gigs and how people who run gigs get gigs. And then we basically rubbed our two brain cells together and we're like, we're people who could run a gig, and then we would be doing a gig, and then other people will give us gigs because we'll give them gigs. We were like really blatant about it. We weren't like, do you know what we want to do? We want to run a great club so that loads of people really enjoy comedy and loads of comedians get a chance. No, our rationale was, we want to do this so we can advance our careers.
Yeah, it wasn't altruistic.
No, we were being very honest with each other. We weren't being honest with anyone else. We were being honest with ourselves. So that was like, I think that was about December. No, it was late 2016. And I think we had our very first gig just at the very start of January 2017 is when we had our first gig. So we started off like running once a month, and like for the listeners, the club we ran is a place called Unshut. And Unshut is a lovely pub down on Camden Street. It's absolutely one of my favourite places. And upstairs, up this very narrow, very rickety stairs, there is a room which is essentially just like a shoebox of a room. Like, just imagine lifting.
That's a fair description, yeah.
Yeah. Like, just basically a shoebox where you can fit in about maybe 20 seats at the most. But, like, of all the rooms I've ever played comedy in, it's actually one of my favourite rooms because it's one of the most simple. It's just got, like, the stage is in front of the crowd and the crowd can look at nothing else but the stage.
Yeah.
Because I've been in comedy clubs where the room is shaped L-shaped, they've got a bar in the middle of the room, everything like that, which is not conducive to comedy at all.
Distracting. It's too distracting, yeah.
Yeah, 100% distracting.
Very intimate. It's a very intimate venue.
Yes, which is fantastic when you get a small crowd, because then you can call it intimate.
yeah, exactly.
Which is what we usually got was a small crowd. Like, sometimes you'd get like a big crowd or something like that, but usually it was pretty small.
And I can't remember, was Unshow just a fiver in or was it free?
Our club was actually free in.
Amazing.
So we were doing the classic business model of
get them in the door and get pints into them.
Get pints into them and then at the end ambush them with the bucket speech.
Oh, yes, yes. Now I remember the bucket. Yeah.
And we also were very conscious, because like we had like two halves, you know, we'd have four comedians the first half, take a break, and then you'd have the second half. We always gave out free sweets to the audience during the break, which was a totally original idea. We didn't steal it from any other club. Nobody's ever done that before. This was just, we were geniuses, absolute geniuses. Actually, sorry, I left out, we weren't the only people running the club. It was me and Rory, but the club had been approached by another guy to run a comedy night at the same time. And they only had, at that stage, they only had like one night free a month for comedy. I was like, oh, these guys want it. This guy wants it. How about we put two groups together, put them in touch, and they can run the club together. And the other guy, I've named Rory because Rory's still a friend of mine and we ran the club together and we're on good terms. The other guy that we ended up running the club with, we'll call him Bob.
Okay. Yes, give me the tea.
Bob wanted to run the club with us. And we, at first, we're like, Bob's a great guy. Bob talks about like marketing plans and he's got friends in graphic design and everything like that, about putting together great posters and flyers and fantastic stuff. And he sent us on the art that his designer friend had created. And we were called... call ourselves Camden Comedy Club because we were on Camden Street, you know?
Makes sense.
And hopefully people will confuse us for the more successful Camden Comedy Club in London. It was another thing we were thinking. So we were thinking just like the letter C looks like an open mouth laughing. And we thought that's what we go with for the graphic. And I keep have remind myself, he's called Bob. I'm not going to use his real name. Bob's friend created this art that looked like a tire that had been cut in half and had grown teeth. Like, that's what the C looked like. And me and Rory were like, Bob, this looks like something on death metal album. Like, this doesn't say comedy. This doesn't say, come on in, we're going to make you laugh. This looks like...
we'll kill you.
We'll kill you, yeah. Yeah, it looked threatening. It looked aggressive. And then... like, there's a little bit of admin in setting up a comedy club as well. Like, when you get there on the night, you know, the sign says, you know, doors open 8:30. You'd get there at like 8 or 7:30 or whatever, and you'd go in and you'd set up the seats, you'd set up the stage, you'd set up the sound system, you'd set up the mic, the lights, everything like that. Me and Rory were always on time, even though we lived not close to Camden. Like, I lived about 45 minutes away, Rory lived about 45 minutes away. Bob lived in Rat Mines, which is literally 10 minutes walk away from the spot. And he's like, oh, I'm in the middle of doing something and I can't get there. And it's like, something's come up. I say, of all the times we were running the club with Bob, Bob showed up beforehand about maybe 5 times in total.
So tell me this, how exactly was he running it then? He wasn't.
He wasn't. There we go.
Like, bang, that would annoy the shit out of me. That would annoy the shit out of me.
He would get other things wrong as well, because I remember we had set up like a Facebook page. All three of us had logins and people could message the page and ask for gigs. And I remember one time this lady messaged and asked for a gig, and she said in her message that she was new and she wondered, was it okay if she was new that she could come along and perform? And we're like, look, we have space on our lineups for people who are new. that's okay. If you're new and you're inexperienced, that's absolutely fine. And I said that in the message. And then later on the same day, our mutual friend Blaheen messaged asking for a gig. And at this stage, Blaheen was like quite an experienced comic. Bob, instead of like writing a bespoke message to Blaheen, he just copied and pasted my earlier message going, it's okay if you're new. It's okay if you're inexperienced.
I'd say Blaheen loved that.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to Blaheen. Shout out to love you, Blaheen. Well, I'd say you were real pissed off at that.
Because like just to anybody to just give them like
yeah,
that
it's suck. No, yeah, it's so like.
It's so rude. It's like.
Such a put dismissive is the word I'm looking for. Dismissive.
Like, just take 2 minutes to say, yeah, we'll slot you in someplace rather than. For some reason, copying, pasting a message that was...
And did you know Blaheen yourself at this stage, or was this before the whole try?
This is actually before... Yeah, this would have been before try. I think I might have run into her maybe one or two gigs.
Yeah, but, it wasn't like she was like, Seamus, the bastard, how dare
he? Oh, she probably was.
Well, yeah, but she know...
It
was kind of a name, maybe not a faceless, but like it was someone behind an account. She didn't have any sort of personal... Right, that's fair enough.
Yeah. So she
wasn't as bad as it could have been, yeah.
Exactly.
But it wasn't great.
Blame the account. It's like, no.
It's our social media guy.
Yeah, he's fired. But eventually... he dropped out himself. Now, really, me and Rory should have had the hard conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
sometimes it's easier to let people drift if they're heading in that direction anyway.
Because essentially, me and Rory were running it by ourselves, and us kicking him out would have been us running it by ourselves. So essentially, we were just running it by ourselves while he did feck all.
Yeah.
Essentially. So that was sort of the infighting drama period over with. But the I suppose the other part that I kind of miss, the thing I miss most about it was the actual organizing lineups, organizing who's going to be on what night.
Yeah, because you're saying eight, like that's a lot.
Actually, it was.
And was that once a week?
It was seven. Sorry, it was seven, and it was once a week, and we would run it on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And it was and it wasn't a lot because you'd have so many people asking you.
Okay.
But then the hard part is trying to balance how many people you want to use up before you can use them again.
Yes. Yep.
Because.
Can't have the same seven people every week. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Because me and Rory, we actually had this like Excel spreadsheet where we had color code. We had the list of acts and we had them color coded. So red was... this person might get on once a year. Orange was, this person's pretty good. They can get on a good few times. And then green is like, you know, a headliner or somebody who's going to knock them dead every single time. So then you're trying to structure it so that you have about maybe one red, five oranges and one green. And the thing is, there's actually not a lot of green. There's a good bit of orange, but there's a lot of red. There's a lot of people doing stand-up who aren't very good at doing stand-up. Some of these people even may have run clubs in the past who were doing stand-up and were terrible, because I remember there was this one person who I won't name.
Please don't.
Who they ran a club and I was running a club at the same time. And basically for me to play their club, I would have to accept them onto our night in Camden.
Yeah.
And... I've never heard a room so silent while one person is talking.
Yikes.
As while he was on. Because the fun thing about the room was they have like a little kitchen off to the side. So when I was emceeing, what I do is I hated being in the room while the act was on, because I was always just pacing back and forth worrying about how the night was going. So I would like step into the kitchen, but you could hear it through it because they just had like this sheet of plywood up over where they
I actually always wondered what was in that room. Interesting, yeah. The kitchen.
Kitchen and about a million records by DJs who had left them there over the years.
Mad.
No idea why. But standing there in the room, listening to this guy, bomb.
God, why would you continue to do that to yourself?
Like, you've seen it yourself. You've been to clubs and you see these people who you're talking to them and they're like, oh yeah, I've been at this years. Yeah, I'm going to be going over to Edinburgh next year. I think, geez, this person, they've really got their head screwed on. They've really got themselves together. They know what they're talking about. And then you see them go up on stage and they tell a joke that might have been on Benny Hill 40 years ago or something like that. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's mad. I don't know. Because, like, I've done a bit of stand-up and it feels amazing when it goes well. But, Jesus, it doesn't feel great when it doesn't go well. Why would you continue to do that to yourself unless you have no idea? Like, unless you're the kind of person who just, you can't understand that it hasn't gone well.
It's really interesting to me, the actual psychology of people who don't know that they're doing poorly.
Mm.
Because how can they be...
How the fuck can they? They're not laughing like it's stand-up.
But it's amazing because they'll be there and they'll be telling jokes that aren't good and then the crowd won't be laughing. And then afterwards, they'll be like, I don't know what's wrong with that crowd. It's like, well, there are six other comedians on and they all got a chuckle from the crowd. The crowd know a joke when they hear it. It's just you don't tell good jokes.
Yeah.
Because I'm being very bitchy in this podcast, but because I love talking comedy. So one thing I've said to friends before is, basically, anything else you do, you can get fired from it or you can be told to stop. Like if you're a milkman who keeps on like just throwing the bottles of milk at houses, somebody's going to say, it's like, you're a very bad milkman. You need to stop being a milkman. But nobody can fire you from being a comedian. So there are people who are doing comedy for years and years. And I suppose in their hearts of hearts, if they're enjoying it and they're having fun and they're not hurting anybody, rant. But if you're running a club and you want your audience to laugh and this person is maybe going to make that audience leave after the break and not stay to the end where they might pay,
that's not great.
Because I like, the thing is, I'll say all this stuff, but I was never mean enough to say to somebody,
yeah, how the heck do you manage that? That must have been tough.
Yeah, because like what was tough as well was when people would bomb and then would later ask for a gig again.
Because of course they would. Like, yeah.
And then you had to be keeping on giving them the same line of, well, you know, we're very busy, we're very booked up. Eventually people get the hint, but it's not 100% pleasant.
No.
No.
Yeah, that seems like that might have been tough. And then, so that was going for years. And what happened to it?
So, essentially...
like, was it COVID or did it close before COVID?
It closed before COVID. It closed a good year and a bit. Year.
Oh, wow.
So we ran for about 2 years.
Okay.
So we didn't get the coveted third season. Bob had left, mm-hmm. and then it was me and Rory. We were running it, and then Rory had met a lovely lady in the course of our friendship, and him and the lovely lady... bought a house in Meath.
Congratulations.
Which is fantastic. Yeah. Delighted for them.
But a little bit further from Camden, yeah.
Yeah, he can't exactly get a bus and a Lewis to it.
Oh, and he doesn't drive?
Oh, no, he does drive, but it's like, you know, he wasn't in an easy commute for him.
No, definitely like, not.
Nobody's going to work a full day.
And then drive to Dublin from Meath, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So then I was pretty much on my lonesome for a while, but with my friend Marcelo. He started helping out, which was great. And we soldiered on for about 6 months. But then, like after Rory had left and everything like that, and the fact that when you're running a club and you're not giving people gigs and you're avoiding people, and when you're going to gigs, people are coming up to you afterwards and you're like, oh man, great set. Really enjoyed your set. Your set was fantastic. And you're like, thank you. And they're like, yeah, and somebody has mentioned, do you run Camden Comedy Club? And you're like, Yeah. It was like, I was just wondering if I could have a gig anytime. Just every interaction with every other comedian
became a transaction.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And because one of my favorite things about comedy was just the sociable aspect of it, like getting out of the house of evening, going out, you see other people who are funny, hopefully you're funny yourself, and then you can chat afterwards. But this whole thing of when people are chatting to you, they're waiting to ask you for a gig. I didn't like it. It didn't feel genuine.
No, I can totally see where you're coming from. Like I play tag rugby.
Mm.
And in tag rugby, like, I love tag rugby. It's a lot of fun. But sometimes when you're the captain of the team, it's not as much fun. It's a lot of organisation as well. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of management. So there's a lot of people management in it, which I presume is the same with that, because you're constantly trying to have to manage people's expectations in terms of whether or not they get another gig, or, you know, how many gigs they get or whatever else. So I can see how that would have kind of taken the fun out of it.
Yeah, it did. And like you said, like, it's this thing where you're not quite the boss, but you're not a peer.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed the company of my peers. So I didn't want, and as well, it was just this commit, because like the thing is with doing comedy, you're going to be going out a lot of nights of the week to do it. But always every Tuesday having to be there, the first one there to set it up, and then being the last one leaving at the end of the night, it was a fair old chunk of time for pretty much zero profit. Mm. I mean, the best thing that came out of the bucket was we got a Ugandan shilling. What else did we get? We got some currency that I don't think are from countries that exist anymore. So at the end of the year, when we gathered up all of the foreign currency, my brother collects coins, so I just handed those over to him. That was probably the greatest perk of running it, because when we would buy sweets, we were buying sweets out of like the last gig's profits.
Yeah, so
there was never
really any left after that.
It wasn't like, if revenue are listening to this and think I have undisclosed income from previous years, no. I think I might be the only person who went into debt buying sweets. But like, I did love running it. And like, one thing I really loved about it, and my favorite thing about it, and the thing I missed the most, was actually emceeing, because I loved trying to figure out what's the best way to engage the crowd, what's the best way to get them going, what's the best way to keep them there, and everything like that. Like, do you know those little party poppers? It's like a 6-gun party popper, and you pull it and it sets off a little cap and sends out streamers. I would wait until the crowd were just off in their own little world, and then I'd run up on stage firing that off, going, "Yay, welcome to Camden Comedy Club!" And just sort of, you know, trying to grab them.
Yeah, real high energy stuff.
Absolutely. Like, trying to grab them from the very offset, trying to set their mind at ease, because one of my other pet peeves, I've probably mentioned about 50 pet peeves by this stage, but is bad MCs, because...
Yeah. Well, it sets the tone for the night, really. So,
exactly. And a lot of MCs don't set the tone. They just do their own stuff.
Yes.
They just do their own material, and they just hog the limelight.
Yeah, that's actually a very astute observation, actually. I've definitely seen two very different approaches. Yeah, look, I just do my 5 minutes, and that's an MC approach. Yeah. And to be fair, I've probably done that as well. So I've hosted a beginner comedy night or two just for a fundraiser for my tag rugby team, and I probably just, like, did 5 minutes, really, rather than properly MC it, but because I didn't really know what I was doing. But, like, I've seen the two approaches. Now, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you just do the start, or did you go in between each comedian, or did you do the start to both halves and the end? How did you approach it?
So what I would do is I would do the start, I'd welcome them, I would tell them, you know, to be comfortable, to be relaxed. I'd tell them that, like, the one thing that was most important was their laughter. I'd say, you know, like, comedy club's like a fire. You know, you've got the three elements. You've got air, heat, fuel. And I explained that, like, their laughter is the fuel. Like, if they find something funny, to laugh. Because it's weird, but sometimes an audience needs to be given permission to laugh.
Yes.
Because sometimes people are just a little bit awkward and they're a little bit reserved. And especially, like, in a comedy club, they might have come there after work.
Mm.
Or they might have come there on a date or something like that, and they're just sort of in their own heads. But you need to kind of reset them, because, like, you know yourself with a lot of things, you'll warm up beforehand to get in the right headspace for it. Whereas the people in the comedy club, they're sitting there, they're on the phone and they're texting and they're talking to their friend. But then if you actually give them that promise, like, you can laugh, you're free to laugh, nobody's going to be looking at you like a seven-headed weirdo for laughing. Yeah.
Do you know, that was some of the best advice, and now Lindsay Byrne has given me a lot of good advice, but that was some of the best advice that she ever gave me, because she was saying, and I actually saw her do it in her own set, and sort of incorporated that, because when you do dark humor, sometimes you need to tell the audience that they're allowed to laugh at it.
Yeah.
And I love a bit of dark humor, so that was like the best thing I learned from her.
Oh no, 100%. And I'll actually be mentioning Lalsy later on. She comes into the story, but no, she is. She's one of the people who I would definitely recommend to going to for advice rather than some others. But no, it is absolutely key to sort of prep the audience, their expectation. So really between acts, the only time I would do material between acts is if an act absolutely died.
And you had to resurrect the room, yeah.
Yeah, because the last thing you want is to have somebody going up to a cold crowd.
Yeah.
That is just cruel. I've been there myself. You're trying to basically restart an engine without the key. It takes an awful lot more effort than you really need to be putting in. So yeah, I would go up, I would warm up the crowd if the act had been cold. And then when they came back, I would do the same stupid jokes over and over again. But I had gotten to the stage where you know exactly how a crowd will respond, and then you could tailor it to the crowd and everything like that. And I'd also be mentioning about like, oh yeah, the sweets are free, but and then I'd say to them like, and please eat the sweets, because if you don't eat the sweets, I'll have to eat the sweets. And it works better if you could see me, but like I'm a larger fella, so it's like, and as you can see, the past audience weren't eating the sweets, folks. And then I would prep them like, you know, at the end of the night, we're going to be passing around a bucket. If you've enjoyed the night, if you've enjoyed everything, please contribute what you can. And then I'd hit the bucket speech again at the very end. And I would tell them to clap for the acts. I would tell them to clap for the headliner. And then I'd say, and then the most important person that you have to clap for yourselves. And I tell the audience to clap for themselves at the very end, which was a little bit schmaltzy, but
they love it, though.
Yeah, I thought it was nice to, like, make the audience know that they're part of it too, because I think sometimes comedians and MCs see audiences, not all comedians obviously, but some see them almost like cattle or something like that, and that the comedian is the only person that matters in the room, but you're not the only person that matters in the room. The audience matters. The audience wants to enjoy themselves. They have come there because life is a great big grey morass of dullness, and they want to enjoy themselves, they want to laugh, they want to have fun. So you need to recognise that, and you need to actually have a back and forth with the audience. You are there to perform, but you're not performing in isolation. You're performing in tandem with them.
Someone gave me that advice once too. It was like, I can't remember who it was, but they were like, audiences don't come out to like hear you complain for 20 minutes. Like, they come out to laugh. So make them laugh. And, you know, if you want to do that, complaining or do whatever, it has to be funny, you know?
Yeah, because you can see that. You'll see a comedian and they'll be talking about the exact same thing. They might be talking about some bugbear that they have, and one person turns it into jokes and one person is just complaining.
Yeah.
It's like there's a difference between joking about something and just ranting.
Yeah.
As I said, you mentioned Lalsy earlier.
Yep.
Lalsy was actually booked to be on the very last gig.
No way.
Yeah, so for the very last gig.
Presumably as a headliner. Right?
She was, as far as I remember, the headliner. Yeah, absolutely. It was an absolutely stacked bill because I had her and Jim Elliot and, oh my God, why am I forgetting his name? I've known him for years. Kevin from Cork, he's bald. Lovely comedian. Anyway, it was a great bill, and one of the reasons that I decided to finally wrap up the club was attendance was kind of dwindling. Now, part of that might have been the fact that I was putting in less effort into promoting it and getting the word out there on socials and everything like that, but attendance had been going down. So for the very last gig, I put it out on blast, on everything. And all the comedians for the night were there, and the door was open, and there weren't people coming up the stairs to come in to the club. So it ended up being an absolute no-show.
Really?
Yeah, there was basically three people showed up.
What?
But you can't go ahead with three.
Of course you can't. Yeah. But, like, that's really surprising to me, especially if you pushed it so much. And, like, you would think that, like, Lolzy would just automatically have probably 10 to 15 people to follow everywhere.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah. I could never figure out why some nights would go better than others. Because it was like, you know, the way people try and tell the future by reading tea leaves or something like that. Some nights it could be pelting rain and a huge crowd would show up. And you'd be thinking, but it's raining. Nobody's going to show up when it's raining. Other times it would be sunny and you'd be like, oh, people would be out. No, nobody would show up. Or I was trying to watch the weather. I was trying to find out what was on TV, what would keep people away. But, like, there was no rhyme or reason as to what. Now, obviously, sometimes you would have, like, a huge draw and that would bring people out. But on this particular night, I don't know, were we cursed or what, but basically not enough people showed up for us to actually go ahead and host the night. So it ended up that we basically sat, Marcelo bought a bottle of wine for the night. So me and the Axe sat around drinking, eating the sweets that we had bought. And I remarked, oh, I thought I was going to run a comedy club, not run it into the ground. which I thought was a fine piece of self-deprecating humour until, I don't know how much later, maybe a year and a half later, I was in a roast battle with Lolzy.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Lolzy, the loveliest human being in the world.
Destroyed you. Did she?
She used that line. I said, Seamus, you know you're supposed to run a comedy club, not run it into the ground.
Oh, I'd say that hurt.
The fact that she took my own words and used them against me, and I couldn't be there on stage going like, hold on, I said that first, because I'd look like a dweeb.
Couldn't you turn it into a roast though? Somehow, I suppose it's too quick. I've never been to a roast battle actually. So are all your roasts pre-planned or do you spit like on the, do you just try to come up with things in
you
the moment?
You will write them beforehand.
Yes.
But you can definitely, like there was one time later on, another comedian, he tried to roast me by going, you were running a comedy club and you didn't have me on. And I go, well, actually, if you do your research, the comedy club was shut a year ago. And number two, you weren't very good.
That's the one time you can be honest with people about why they didn't get onto your thing.
100%. 100%.
Oh, I'd love to go to a roast battle.
I hope they'll be back soon. But yeah, Lolzy.
Oh, I love her so much. Yeah. Brilliant. So that ruthless. That's ruthless.
It was absolutely cruel because basically that line was my inscription on the gravestone of Camden Comedy. And then she used it against me all that time later. It's just.
Not to rub it in or anything, but did she win the roast battle?
She did. She did.
Oh, I wouldn't go up against Lolzy in a roast battle.
Oh, no. She's
she's amazing.
Yeah, she crafts silver bullets, every single one. But yeah, that was the last night. It was like a sad little party.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of sad, but it's also kind of sweet. So I suppose bittersweet would be the word for it.
Because really, I wasn't too sad at the end of it because it was kind of like this obligation off of my back because I think if you're running a comedy club, you really have to love running it.
Yes.
You have to want to do it. You have to want to be there. You have to want to put the work in.
And maybe not getting the audience on the final night was like, oh, right, this is the right thing for me to move on. And maybe if you'd like packed out the place, you would have actually had a second thought maybe in your mind about, oh, well, this is popular. What, you know, should I keep going or whatever? And I suppose at least you got to spend the final night then with your acts and with people you presumably had spent a lot of time with over the last 2 years before that, just drinking wine and eating sweets.
Yeah.
And it actually does sound kind of good when I put it like that.
It was a nice little wind down because it wasn't organised to be a little send-off party, but that's what it turned into. And it was kind of nice.
Those are the best ones.
A party. Well, we do have sweets, we do have wine, we do have a room, and there's people. This is essentially a party that wasn't meant to be a party.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the rise and fall of Camden Comedy Club.
Wow. Would you run another one?
I would love to help run another one.
That's a great answer. I'd love to be Bob.
I'd love to organise lineups again, because that was like, I don't do fantasy football, but the same excitement other people get out of fantasy football is what I get out of lineups.
Oh my God, I can totally see that now. Yeah.
You're like the dream team. It's like, her on first opening up, and then that person first after the second half, they'll bring a bit of life back into the room.
This must be how the Try producers feel when they're trying to pair people.
I think
not them together, they're shit. Those two are good together.
I think that's a lot more dark and occult. I think the guys have a cauldron and it's like alphabetti spaghetti, and they do a chant and then people's names rise to the surface.
Probably. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm delighted to share it, delighted to tell it. I've never actually told the whole story, so.
That's amazing. So this is an exclusive.
100%. You have the exclusive rights.
Can you tell everyone again where to find you on the internet?
Yes. So you can find me as Mr. Stackpool on all my socials. If you can't remember Mr. Stackpool, just think of Mrs. Tackpool and you'll find me straight away.
And what are you doing these days? You make sketches on the media, social media, don't you?
At the moment, just doing the sketches, just doing try, really just waiting for
live gigs.
Because a load of people have been doing online gigs and everything like that. More power to them. I will never take away from an online gig. But personally, when I'm just sitting in my own living room telling jokes and I can't hear an audience or can't see an audience, doesn't do the same.
It's not the same. Like, yeah.
Having a live audience in front of you.
It's also daunting as an idea, because I thought, like, for a while I was like, maybe I should do like a stand-up set. And then I was like, but then I'd just be in my sitting room and no idea how people are reacting to it. There's no laugh. So when you watch back a video of somebody doing stand-up as well, because see, I used to video a lot of my stand-up for my YouTube channel. You often can't hear the laughter.
Yeah.
And so it's really awful to listen to, because it's like, it's just really uncomfortable. So yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to do the online gig now personally.
Oh yeah, no, I do always give, like, the people who do it, they are absolute troopers. And I did a few, and I did enjoy, because especially this was during the doldrums of COVID lockdown, like just chatting with people online was fun. But like, the actual thing of being in front of a crowd in an enclosed space and that laughter, that is absolute crack.
Isn't it? It's very like a drug, yeah.
You come 100%.
Out and I feel as high as a kite afterwards. Like,
oh yeah, like that was always the thing. You'd be going home on the bus and you would just be buzzing after a gig. Because like that's the reason I keep on doing it. I am addicted to that. Like, that's why I haven't given up on it over the last year. That's what I want to get back to, you know, is live performances.
And so for anybody listening who's not in Ireland, and also for me, because I'm not sure that I know, what is the situation now? It's just that there's no updates yet, isn't it? And there's no further easing that will allow live comedy gigs or live, like, theatre arts gigs till October, is it?
Yeah, like, comedy is essentially like the redheaded stepchild of the arts, because like live music and theatre and everything like that, there's a lot of talk about that because those are usually dedicated premises.
Mm.
Whereas comedy is usually a room above a pub or a room below a pub.
I know, but that's what confuses me, because it's like, we can go into the pub now. With, you know, if you're vaccinated, you can go into the pub. So I don't really understand why they can't have a small comedy thing. Like, obviously it can't be 100 people, but like, surely it could be 20 people.
Because essentially, if you had 20 people in a room and one of them decided to start telling jokes, that wouldn't be against the rules. But if you were to organise that now, that would be against the rules. So
rules are very odd. None of them
they're very strange. Apparently, all restrictions are to be rolled back by Christmas.
What we should do is we should go to Croke Park. You can get 40,000 people into Croke Park in a minute. So just stick a bunch of comedians right in the middle of Croke Park with a microphone.
That would just like a ring fence, like the way the Artane Boys band march. Just have the comedians marching, telling jokes. That'd be something.
Right. So check out all your sketches online, and when live gigs are back, check you out live.
Yes, yes. I will be shoving the gigs down your throat on all my social medias once they're back.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on the audio platforms, thank you for listening. If you are listening on the audio platforms, if you could give us a review, that would be really great. It really helps us out in the old rankings, podcast rankings. And please subscribe on YouTube if you're more of a visual listener, watcher, viewer, whatever. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you.
Thank you.
See you in the next one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.